talking about, we've got 2,700-mile chain of installations, including perhaps a half a dozen major dams into the heart of the system, and then peripheral areas getting down the mountains, which have, of course, the purpose of controlling the floodwaters in that area. If it were the policy of the United States to bomb the dikes, we could take them out, the significant part of them out, in a week. We don't do so for the reasons that I have mentioned, because we're trying to avoid civilian casualties, not cause them. Now, with regard to the reports that have come from Hanoi, that there has been some damage to some parts of the dike system, I think it's important to note two things. One, there has been no report of flooding. Second, there has been no report of any strikes on the major dike areas. What I'm referring to is the big dams, which are the heart of the system. There have been reports of incidental damage to some of the peripheral installations in this 2,700-mile city, which covers the country of North Vietnam. Now, under these circumstances, I think that it is well to keep in context, first, what our policy is, and second, what is expected then. Our policy is not to bomb civilian installations, and second, our restraint, it seems to me, rather than being subject to criticism, should be subject to objective analysis, and it seems to me, a considerable amount of support. As far as this matter is concerned, I think, too, it's time to strip away the double standard. I noted with interest that Secretary General of the UN, just like his predecessor, seized upon this enemy-inspired propaganda, which is taken in many well-intentioned and naive people, to attack what he called the American bombing of civilian installations and risking civilian bombs, and yet not raising one word against deliberate bombing of civilian installations in South Vietnam. Now, just so the record will be kept straight, and it should be stated at this point, all of you ladies and gentlemen, of course, are aware of the president, perhaps he was effectual man in this country. I just got a cable from Ambassador Bunker, and I want to address that up. What has happened to civilians in the new offensive? You recall in my speech May 8th, I said that 20,000 civilian casualties, including women and children, resulted because of the deliberate shelling of the cities and the slaughtering of refugees indiscriminately by the North Vietnamese. The number is now 45,000, including women and children, over 15,000 a day. I asked him for the number of refugees higher than I thought. There were 860,000 made homeless by the North Vietnamese invasion of South Vietnam, the Swiss invasion. 600,000 of them are still in refugee camps awaiting their homes. Looking back over the period of the Great Cross War, we find that since 1965, there have been 600,000 civilian casualties in South Vietnam as a result of deliberate policy of the North Vietnamese Congress. Not accidental, but deliberate. And in North Vietnam, in the period of 54 to 56, in their so-called land reform program, a minimum of 50,000 were murdered, assassinated. And according to the Catholic bishop of Da Nang, whom I talked to, I was there in 1956 in South Vietnam, in addition to 800,000 refugees who came south, there were at least a half a million who died in slave labor camps in North Vietnam. Now, I do not relate this series of incidents for the purpose of saying, because they did something bad, we should. What I'm simply saying is, let's not have a hypocritical double standard. The United States has been restrained, greater restraint than any great power has ever shown in handling this war. We will continue to be restrained. We have to do what is necessary against military targets in order to accomplish the objectives that I described in my goal, my speech. But on the other hand, far as this particular matter is concerned, I want to say that if damage did occur, that we are making every possible effort to see that it does not occur again, which gets me very much. Military commanders, aircraft commanders, and so forth, in terms of where military targets are instructed to avoid civilian damage, really. That is why some targets in the heart of Hanoi, for example, major power installations, fuel installations in the heart of Hanoi, have not been hit, because I have not wanted to have civilian casualties if possible. This is a major propaganda campaign. It's one that does concern us. And let us keep the record straight. In the event that the United States followed the course of action recommended by some of those who have voted for the so-called war resolution in the Senate of the United States, it would mean that there would be visited upon South Vietnam the same atrocities visited upon North Vietnam, with perhaps at least a million marked for assassination because they have fought against the North Vietnamese attempt to conquer South Vietnam. I will add one other thing as far as negotiations are concerned. We have negotiated in public. We have had one private conference a week ago, lasting approximately 6 hours. We hope to continue to negotiate. We made fair offers on the track, on ceasefire, on political stuff. We have not made it on a daily basis. We made fair offers on exchanging prisoners of war, not on the risk of action in the place of occupation. But having done this, there is one thing that we have not done. And this is the one hang up in the settlement today. And that is the demand for the animals. Indirectly or directly, to do what they cannot accomplish themselves, impose a communist government in South Vietnam. That would be the height of generosity. Impose the 17 million people in South Vietnam, communist government, with the bloodbath that followed.
First, you mentioned a political settlement. What do you foresee as a possibility without necessarily elections? Do you see the two factions in South Vietnam coming together in some kind of agreement without an election or one possible solution in the current time?
That's a very perceptive question, but it is one that I think any of you here would agree that I should not comment on for the reason that negotiations are going underway. I have read these long negotiating sessions, Republicans, of course, and even more importantly, at a time that matters are being discussed, it is not well for me to state anything with regard to what's happened in negotiations. I want to say that we are negotiating with the desire of ending this war as soon as possible. The fastest way to end the war, and the best way to end it, is through negotiation. And we have heard that public figures and their comments will not do anything to undercut negotiations, that Congress in its actions will not affect a message to the enemy. Don't negotiate with the President administration, because wait for us. We'll give you what you want, South Vietnam.
Mr. President, to follow up the first question, if I may. There have been reports that SAM sites have been put on top of some of those sites and dams. Does your policy rule out the bombing of that particular area where there are dams, where there are SAM sites?
I have seen those reports. Let's start. I know it's a great comment about it. The situation there is one that we would lean against the taking out of SAM sites. On targets that would result in civilian casualties of a substantial amount. However, I have not seen in recent days any reports indicating that any such SAM sites have been hit. And we would press the debate. I think we are very careful in regard to it. We would do so only if we had to do so in order to protect American fighters. otherwise we'd be here.
Do you think that anyone would be interested in that building to run for law?
Well, Ms. Thomas, the question that you asked, of course, is related to some of the things that we're trying to pick up on the other side. Mr. Ziegler, as president, reported to the committee on the press that I have given restrictive instructions on the building. Direct, or in the case of your question, indirect, it's just a personal matter. The question of the selection of a vice presidential candidate, one which is a matter for the presidential candidate to decide, with, of course, the advice and consent of this convention. And I am not going to interject myself at that point. Since it is a personal matter, it does give me an opportunity to say that not now on this matter, nor in this campaign in the future, are we going to campaign on personalities or on party labels. The issues that divide the opposite side of this administration are so wide. In fact, it's the clearest choice in this century that we must campaign on issues. There's an honest difference of opinion on foreign policy, an honest difference of opinion on domestic policy, an honest effort on most major defense issues. Under these circumstances, this is a campaign which I think should be waged. I think all the fiscal should be waged on the issues of the American people and make their choice between who the present president has or a challenger who honestly so basically disagree with fundamental ends and goals.
Are we to understand perhaps that now that stop bombing the dice has been made a political slogan this year, that perhaps those who have got behind it have not thoroughly checked the background of those accusations?
I didn't use the word naive unintentionally. The North Vietnam means a very skillful propaganda. They have, of course, brought those who have been invited to the country to the areas where they have gone off and to ask them to go into great lengths to fill those holes in the national market for the hospital and the center. But again, comment on the point. In my view, this is a deliberate attempt on the part of the North Vietnamese to create an extraneous issue to divert attention from one of the most barbaric invasions in history, compounded by a violation of all concepts of international law and the handling of prisoners of war. And for them, with their policy of deliberate murder and assassination and otherwise attacks on civilians for the purpose of killing civilians, for them to try to seize on this and divert attention to them. First, it to me is a patient propaganda effort, and it is one that I think needs to be in. We have to, of course, be responsible for what we do. But it's trying to ministerially difficult to that some Americans, which most of us should perhaps realize that we talk about morality, that it's never an easy question. If I digress for a moment, I'll give you a follow-up question on the other matter. I remember one of the first conversations I had with President Eisenhower about war. We were right back to the point where we were maybe going to the part of those things, you know, meetings in Quantico at the Defense Academy. And he asked me to write back on a very early administration in the first year. We were talking a little about the decisions he had to make in World War II. And one of the questions that I raised with him was, here on our part, the deliberate bombing of German cities, the tragedy of Dresden, of Essen, of Hamburg, not to mention the land. And General Eisenhower said that that was a terribly difficult decision for us, the strategic bombing of civilians. height of immorality would be to allow Hitler to rule Europe. Now, in our case, we have not gone that far. We are not going to bomb civilian targets now. We are not using the great power that could finish off North Vietnam and Afghanistan. We will. But it would be the height of immorality. This time, leave Vietnam and leave to turn over to this North Vietnamese, the fate of 17 million South Vietnamese who do not want to come inside, or turn it over to them. That's what this is about. That is the only issue that is left. And those who say end the war really should name their resolution along with war. They should name it along the war, not because of people, but they want to end the war just as ever. Face this fact. We have only one president to respond, as I said, 1968. And at that time, we should maybe call and express quite often, like, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think we ought to do about negotiation? I didn't think there was much chance of success in negotiation. But I said, I thought quite correctly, we have only one president. I don't want to destroy any chance that he might have to end this war. Now, at this point, the chance for a negotiated settlement is better now than it has ever been. Boy, it isn't sure. And I'm not going to raise any false hopes. But the enemy is failing on its military offensive, although there's still some hard fighting that takes place in the Montreal Bay area. But the enemy also is, of course, suffering the consequences of our mining action, cutting the roads, and the other systems that we bring in supplies to North Vietnam. And under these circumstances, the enemy, because also we have made a very fair offer, has every incentive to negotiate. But when you put yourself in the position of and then they hear that the Congress of the United States says, we will give you what you want, regardless of what the President wants. Why not wait? This is the problem. I hope that the senators and congressmen consult their conscience. They would realize that we have just 3 months left before the election. In those 3 months, we hope to do everything we can to bring this war to an end. And they should take no action which would jeopardize those negotiations. I can only say that the resolutions to this point cannot help. They can only confuse the enemy at best, and at worst, they will go on with war.
Vice President, Vice President's nominee, often is chosen under great pressure, which means often the Vice President under great pressure of time and circumstances. Sometimes it turns out all right, sometimes it doesn't. Do you think that message could be included?
I was Vice President. I can only get my own experience. This is very right. When an individual feels that he is quite, shall we say, has a better than even chance to be the president, he does a lot of thinking about who should be the vice presidential candidate, both because of his potentialities as a candidate, and both in terms of the office of vice president, and in case of an accident, the president. I can assure you that naturally I went through that process and made my own decision, and I recommended any candidate to do that. I don't think it's quite as off the top of your head as you would indicate, because most of us, when we are seeking the presidency, long before the convention, have a pretty good idea as to whether we have a good shot at it, and we do a lot of thinking about the vice president.
Mr. President, given the continuing demand for revealing the financial backgrounds of candidates and office holders, what is your reaction to the suggestion that medical records of candidates and office holders be revealed? And as a corollary to that, you will understand. have you ever felt yourself in more danger of being overconfident? There is a bridge, but it isn't direct.
Well, it's, I have to say that for me to answer that question, if you're so self-serving, so my medical records, of course, like my financial records, are now already on the books, open to the press. You recall in 1968 a question was raised about my medical history, and Mr. Ziegler at that time put out the medical history, including the examinations, with some of the examinations. Goes back to the time that I came to Washington in 1946. As far as my financial records are concerned, they also are public. Every year, my medical record is made public by Dr. Nakash. Readings have seen there is something that's come out of the rest of my life. I would also suggest that in my case, too, it's somewhat of a self-serving record, because Nakash was putting out a few days ago that, according to his contribution, probably I can set a record. I've been in this office now 3.5 years and I've never missed an appointment because of the call. So considering what I went through, fairly certain crises, I would say it's a matter of chance of travel. I seem to be friendly to anybody with questions saving my call. I think that in the answer to your question, that's a matter that will inevitably be a subject that will be raised, and in which the candidates will have each of them make their own determination. I made mine. I don't suggest that others should be like that. Now, as far as older contracts, do you have a lot of health?
No, sir. In terms of the circumstances and the situation, given your position today as an incumbent president running for re-election, you are the favorite. And events in the last 2 or 3 weeks, let alone the last 2 or 3 days, have enhanced that. That's what I was talking about.
Well, I recall that historically, I think that you were covering us at that time. We both go back to the side. I recall in 1992, another vice presidential candidate was urged by us to join the team. And then there were many who thought the fact that he was being urged to off, whether he stayed on or got off, that it was the same presidential candidate. It didn't. I would say that is certainly would not enter into my predictions at this time. As far as making a prediction is concerned, I will give it more thought and will be glad to respond to it when I have what I call it a political press conference, which I will have immediately after the Republican convention, in the Western White House, implementing. As far as what the situation is now, though, looking at the back of the Democratic Party has a much higher registration than the Republican Party, looking at the volatile mix of the American voting public. It is my belief, and I have told all of my associates this, regardless of what the polls show, whether we're ahead or behind, this will be a close, hard-fought election, right down to the wire. People who make predictions now could look very, very bad later, and we're going to assume throughout this election that we have a very hard fight in our hands. We think that it is a good thing that it's going to be a fight on the issues. A good, hard, clean fight on the issues before the American people. We think it'll be close, and we hope to win.
What impact on American policy in the Middle East is the withdrawal of Soviet personnel and leaders like you there?
This question, I notice, has been reflected on by some lower level officials in government. Situation there is still one that's not clear. comment upon it. First, might possibly be erroneous. Second, could very well be harmful to our goal of justice. So I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I'm interested in whether it would be helpful to our goal of just settlement. It might exacerbate the problem by trying to evaluate what happened with the adoption and so forth.
Mr. President, I was having to advise by you, could you tell us your coming prospects? Your selection, Mr. Agnew.
We got a question. I just want to get a vice president elected before.
On the subject of your selection of Mr. Agnew, could you tell us if you considered anybody else for the job and who they were?
No. My thoughts with regard to Vice President Agnew were expressed in rather great sense in this very room and in one of the other networks. And CBS and on my occasion. I expressed my confidence in Vice President. I won't go over those matters that I covered in considerable length right now, except to say that I reaffirm my confidence in Vice President. And under the circumstances, I believe that the choice I made for this is one that I'll be reaffirmed by asking me to run for the office again. Now, there has been speculation, I would hate to say, about other people for the vice president. That's inevitable. The vice president could get sick, or the vice president might decide not to run. All these things can come in sick, and it's also an accident. There's been a lot of speculation. Secretary Conway's name comes to mind. I should point out that a really great injustice is in Secretary Conway. One of the news reports to the effect that I gave Secretary Conway bad news and he was not going to be the vice president. And when I saw him Friday night, this was not bad news. As a matter of fact, it wasn't news at all. He and I had discussed this problem in California after his little trip at that time. I discussed the vice presidency after all, not only the standpoint of ability to hold the office of vice president, but from the standpoint of ability to win the election. And Secretary Conway, whose political judgment I respect very much, strongly urged that the vice president has to be continued on the chair.
Mr. President, I have a question related.
I'm bombing Mr. Vice President. Would you say that you've been resisting pressure from the military about the
The pressure does not come from the military. I brought this over the back of war, and actually, one of my neighbors, as a matter of fact, I can say one thing about our military because my dog speaks up. You get the idea that you were a bunch of savage flyboys, and they left to get that action machine gun and a little civilian and all the rest. We can be very proud of our military, not only the men that are flying, they're brave. Courageous, get the men on the ground. We can be very proud of the Marines, all of them have gone now for what they did to the Marines, the ground soldiers, for the civilians and refugees there. It's a story of generosity in a country that's never been equal by anybody else. And as far as our military commanders are concerned, while they do give me their judgment as to what will affect the military outcome. They have never recommended, for example, bombing and all. You've seen some of them bomb and all. In fact, they were around 68 as well as 64. But our military doesn't do that. They know they believe that the decom is productive. And second, they believe it's not necessary. Not necessary. It might shorten the war, but it would leave a legacy of hatred throughout that part of the world from which we might never recover. So our military have not advocated bombing the diet. They have not advocated for bombing split centers. They are doing their best to carry out the policy that we want of hitting military targets only. And then as a result of what will often happen, bomb is dropped in areas of injury to civilians. It is not by intent, and it's It's a very great difference.
A similar question was asked another president in your experience. Would you please tell us what policy decisions Vice President Agnew has contributed to in your administration?
Well, I don't need a couple minutes. Good decision. And Now, history has it, you meet the fact without any increase, and because you have a viable policy to say this. And then finally, there of course was the savings made on the food floor. Now, I criticize the contract the board did many of us were up. But his decision to go into Korean was right. It was necessary. It was tough. Just before Dean Atchison died, using as long as we talked about being in the agency. I talked too often. That's why I simply say, here was a little man from Missouri. He was the vice president. People said, if you find a Roosevelt, fight in Roosevelt. So many others, the power of patriotism, cast in the descent of the Red Thread movement from Missouri. The little man from Missouri had that indefinable quality as did the big man from New York, Theodore Roosevelt, that character that made him a man capable of making tough decisions.
Thank you.
That's what was important.
Thank you.
I speak the way you waltzed in the Greek gate. One with their children, and then into this three great decisions there, Greek gate. All of a sudden, that's great that you've got something.
Yeah.
There's too much, which is the problem. But that's the biggest problem with the press conference. There's real Jesus Christ. There's what? 20 major stories in here.
They only want to.
They won't use it, but I mean, if you went out in the abstract and made any one of about, well, maybe 8 or 10 of the statements that you made, they would be a major story.
One of the things that this doesn't accomplish, though, which is you can't have the press when you sit there and when you talk to them this way in the office. They're not going to be for you, but it's much harder for them to be rude, to be suspicious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm utterly convinced this is the better format if you're going to.
You sure got your steer?
Vietnam.
All your strokes in
Vietnam?
Oh,
I have to. I'm sure. I'm doing strike on ours. Prolong the war, man.
Yeah. Well, all that fight is crap. I'm hitting him on the double standard.
Hypocritical double standard. Well, I'm
like walking right where you belong.
Yeah.
Yes. You got it?
And also standing up for the American military.
Yeah. That'll be ignored. You'll never see that. That'll never see the light of day.
What's that?
Defending the American military.
No. But I'll tell you what to see the light of day. It's the first answer. That's that needed to be said, and it's said just the way it should have been said.
About the dice?
Yes, absolutely.
That wasn't the dice first.
Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was. About the hypocrisy.
First one,
double stack.
Do it again on the fifth one. Where you got into the other lot.
Well, I deliberately didn't want to do this kind of press conference and make a speech and talk.
Yeah.
You just don't have to worry about short answers.
Sorry.
And
I tried to cut it off at 30 minutes.
Actually, what I was saying, Bob, I'm really convinced that these office conferences, in terms of keeping the press just a little bit loose, are much better than the others because you don't have the antagonist relationship in the office
right.
that you do out there.
Right.
On television, they're going to show you up.
Plus, this at the end was just great, too.
You mean about the...
Well, the whole thing.
I think one of the better answers is about TR, Truman.
Well, I think the best answer... The best answer, really, with all of its meaning, with all of its historic significance, was I can... I only need 2 minutes.
Yeah.
that was very
Eisenhower said that was first. Give me a week.
And I'll think about it. He said, I only need 2 minutes. It had so much built into that one line that would get a lot of good sidebar play. And
that's great sort of self-deprecation. That's supposed to be one of the great blows to you and all that.
Right.
See.
Whoa. finally get a little scaring out of this, which is
good. About time.
About time.
Falls in
and we gave it to us today and said, well, we're all right. If you had met with the, I got it to me, know that I, he said, I called George Bush and Paul, and I was very contrite. Bush went to see him. I said, screw him. I'm going to be contrite in public. The hell would this be contrite and kick us in public? We're not going to get away with it anymore.
I agree. Absolutely.
And I stuck it right to him and I said, like his predecessor.
Mars said.
The other thing too, I promise.
Yeah, that's that. That's the kind of stuff that it'll be in the trench that Waldheim will see it. And the other UN stars. Set of views than you generally hear. Some of the bitch Armin Hammer called and said that. He says, I think I'm going to be able to persuade Vernon Watson again that. Just want to give you a report. I'm working hard on it. Linda Johnson told him not to do it. Because it might hurt his relations in the company, but I think I can talk him out of that. He's giving me all this crap. And then he says he wants me to call Peterson and make sure that he gives him Babcock a good reception in Moscow or something. Well, they'd already set that up another way. I'm not going to do that, though. I don't think this guy ties each one thing right to the next.
I would bother Connie with that, actually. Right. The hell of a son of a bitch.
Watson will talk to Connie, and Connie make his deal with Watson, and then do it around him.
Simple said.
He never asked a question.
No. Simple said.
He doesn't like to ask questions.
He said the president, you know how they talk out there. He said the president was calm, collected, and very much in charge. He said if the president would have been any more relaxed, he said I would have looked for him to begin to rise. He said, I would have looked for him to begin to ascend. But the overall reaction out there is, you know, here's a guy in charge talking about what he believes.
Thanks. What's the lead?
Well, the lady, President Nixon, lashed out at critics of his Vietnam policy today and said the North Vietnamese were promoting a hypocritical double standard and charging U.S. planes for bombing dams and dikes. The chief executive delivered a spirited defense of U.S. policy in Vietnam at an impromptu news conference in his office. He said the United States was applying great restraint. We could finish off North Vietnam in an afternoon, and that his policy was geared to gain a negotiated settlement. UPI, President Nixon said UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim had been duped by communist propaganda into criticizing U.S. bombing of North Vietnam without raising one word of protest against North Vietnamese criminal acts in the South. President Nixon personally ruled out the session of Senator Tom Eagleton's mental treatment and predicted the November election would be a close one that should be decided on the issues.
Good.
Asked if he was now overconfident of victory as a result of the revelations that Eagleton was treated three times between 1966 and 1967 with fatigue and depression, Nixon reached to his own background and predicted that the McGovern Eagleton ticket would not be severely damaged. Nixon told the news conference
that was a good slug, though. Say what they all predicted it was going to ruin the ticket when they tried to throw me off the ticket. And it didn't. You know, that's a very subtle hint to the government. Keep it.
Told a news conference that November 7th, the election between him and the Democratic challenger George McGovern provides, quote, the clearest choice in this century. We must campaign on issues and not personality. It's my belief that regardless of what the polls show, this will be a close, hard-fought election right down to the wire. We are going to assume throughout this election we have a hard fight on our hands.
That's good. Our troops will like to hear that. All those people that say don't be overconfident.
Yeah. They always want to be told that things are bad.
No, they want to be, they want to.
But this checkmates any, when you get a wire lead like that, that checkmates any, you know, indiscriminate use pulling quotes out and attaching it to an Eagle story, Eagles story.
It's amazing they get that done so fast, wires. They get that right there. This Arctic looks well written. Here it is 10 minutes later.
They're writing it in here. They write it
for dictating.
They have it written, they have it basically written, and then they
demand
they
go right. It's a damn good piece of writing.
Oh, that's their trade. Work fast.
Seppo is pleased with the, was he just him alone or the others?
No, others were saying that.
But he was pleased because of the style.
Rather than something.
He likes the president was nervous.
He likes the relaxed.
It was a very impressive session. What, you know, the general summation.
Did you see, Robert, the Los Angeles chapter of the newspaper?
Yes, sir.
Sure. Prominently endorsing the. That's probably, you see, the Los Angeles Times started dominant that goddamn thing. Can we do a little heat on that? Can we get George Putnam, for example, Bob, would you just get a few to kick the shit out of that? The president won't get a good break in his own hometown because of the guilt.
What do you think?
Putnam did wrong or something like that?
Sure.
That's what that sounds like. An important thing to do. Also, I would say that be sure that that is with a vicious attack. You go to every publisher, editor, dailies, and dog concession owners in the area, in all sections. See? Just let them think a little. Not from us, but you know. They got me says they love to deal with it.
Sure.
Keep rolling. Okay. That must be the time. They would have to have some sort of
there's how much bigger they must well.
Five liberal senators to vote with you on the annual war amendment.
I can't be in a position now, this close to the election, calling these sons of bitches and begging them and being turned down. I'm just talking about, who is it? I suppose Miller's in the group.
No.
Saxby.
Cook,
Mathias.
Cook, Mathias, Pearson, Stafford, and Stevens. We've got to get three of them, they think. Try five.
Should they try Henry? He's by far the most connected person I know.
I'm sure they have.
Just five. Who's suggesting him? Timmons?
Carlos Timmons. Carlos.
How do they vote?
Early part of next week. What they're figuring is you got 11 Republicans winning against us on Monday night. They think these five are the best possible switches out of the 11, and if they can get three, they're all right. Been on TV, you would have done it different. And they would.